welcome to the SUS News podcast series, where we interview newsmakers and you know, people doing stuff with drones, man. Today, all we're going to do is Gene and I are going to speak about some current events and the Texas Robotics Summit, because I know Gene was there. We did a podcast about that earlier in the year. We had a guy on. We were talking about all of that. It sounded really exciting. Drones and robotics and all these scenarios and the barbecue. It's Texas. And the barbecue. Yep. And all the rest. Do you guys like do anything without a barbecue? You know, just curious.
Well, fajitas. We do fajitas quite a bit. But barbecue is pretty much a prime staple around here. It's a major food group.
It's a major food group. We got the, yeah. So, you know, it's good, right? I mean, everybody likes food. And so they're, I mean, maybe we could just start there. So did you, the barbecue going or what?
Oh, yeah. It was, man, it was a real meat fest up there. We had every kind of burnt beast that you could imagine up there, and along with all the trimmings and the fixings, and there was a bunch of folks there. Let me tell you, you know, we had Tom Prentice on a while back talking about it, and, you know, I got to tell you, of course, there's no mistaking that, you know, I'm a public safety guy, you know, fire and search and rescue and all that good stuff, but if you are in that sort of thing, this one was the one to go to. I mean, it's you've got like-minded individuals, and interestingly enough, we had them from both sides of the country, the top of the country, the bottom of the country. We had L.A. was there, New York FD was there, and we had some folks from the northern tier, Idaho, Illinois, those sorts, and it was just kind of a really eclectic group of public safety folks, and there was a lot of knowledge being shared up there. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, it sounds good. And but more importantly, when you said fixes, which, no, I'm kidding. I'm all about the fixings. But, you know, there are lots of different scenarios and things. And I do want to, I'd like to run that down, but also, you know, usually we start the show and we talk about some current events and you know, whatnot, and chagrin and all the rest of that. And one of the big ones that happened down there in Texas, maybe you'd like to talk about it, because it also ties back into SUAS News and, you know, the Wayback Machine and all the rest of that.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting, because if our listeners will remember, they may have to go back a ways to kind of get this one, but the River of Blood, I'm sure that that probably rings a bell with any of our hardcore drone aficionados, but up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, there was a guy that was flying around, you know, I think it was something like a Cracker Barrel, or, you know, it wasn't, you know, a really advanced aircraft, but he was trying to do some adjustment with his camera, and he imaged this creek that quite literally ran red with blood.
Right. And, so for anybody that can confuse that with Game of Thrones or something, no, it was a drone story.
Yeah, it was a drone story, and it was a slaughterhouse, a processing plant that was dumping into the creek. Anyway, it caused a big kerfuffle here. There was, you know, fines, heads rolled, the whole nine yards. And anyway, what sprang forth from that was legislation. It was kind of knee-jerk legislation on how to control drones. And it really clamped down on things pretty big. And there was a lot of squalling and squealing, and of course it got immediately challenged, and it's taken this long, but it was challenged, and it was repealed, I believe it was Monday.
Right.
And now for unconstitutional.
For context for the listeners, that story was from 2012. So if folks want to go back, you could go to the SUS News page and search, or even Google it, you know, SUS News, and River of Blood or whatever, and the story comes up and talks about it. You're right. Now, what came out of that is, you know, you can't dump, you know, blood into the river or whatever, you know. Fines and, you know, people got fined and people, you were right, you know, it caused a big kerfuffle. People were upset. And it came back and they had that legislation. You couldn't take, you know, drone pictures and stuff. I mean, it's totally ridiculous. But it shows you how much pull those people had, you know, that industry. So it's interesting, you know, that it took this long. And it is one of those things. And I think that's another issue with, you know, it ties right back into the drone thing is, yes, okay. So you can get some bad regulation, which chills the First Amendment, in my estimation. Because the public has a right to know on this stuff. And then you throw it in the courts, and it takes 10 years for it to get resolved. 10 years of my life's ticked off. I'm not getting it back. It's kind of how there I feel go. About the FAA and the full NAS integration 2015 that didn't happen, and everybody acts like nothing's going on. Anyway, you know, some of that is going to lead into our other current event stories. And you know, I did want to talk about that. You know, we've got it's kind of interesting. So this thing in the Ukraine, it's a lot different than what, you know, all the Sandy wars that we had for the last 20 years. Because I guess, you know, most of these people that we, this asymmetrical warfare thing, they didn't have good propaganda. They didn't have, you know, the chicks on TikTok with the guns and, you know, everything else. And, that we're seeing now, and what we're really seeing is the consumer electronics thing coming to the forefront of war. We've talked about it a little bit on the podcast, but you know, it brings another thing to light, and that's the open source code. And you know, if you're not flying the DJI, there are a few other manufacturers that are out there working, but a lot of people are using, you know, a couple of the open source hardware, open source code, and it's being used out there on the battlefield. And it was funny when it first came out, everybody, oh, you know, we don't want any military connotations because this is the Silicon Valley. Anything that has any DOD connotations is just bad, automatically bad. Can't do anything with it, which is ridiculous because Silicon Valley started because of the huge military aerospace industry here in California. And I don't know if people know that or not, but you know, Steve Wozniak's dad worked for a you know, aerospace company and got Blem transistors from dad's company, and without them there would have been no homebrew, you know, PC club, and no homebrew PC club, and basically most of Silicon Valley, the bottom falls out of most of Silicon Valley. So that's a total misnomer, you know, that we don't have any let's say attachment to the military industrial complex. But fast forward, you know, not only is that stuff happening over there, but also we've got Blue UAS running the same thing, and you know, it's kind of like we've talked about DJI, and I just don't want to beat up on DJI because some of this open source code, you got some of the same deal. Nobody's vetting it, nobody knows what's in it, and everybody's using it, and they say, well, it's our own code. We got some of this stuff in here. And I know that you're a programmer guy, Gene. So, I mean, have you ever gone through any of that and looked at what's going on? People putting 7 lines out of 10 with the open source code, yada, yada.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you can get a baseline on just about anything with ArgyPilot or any of those ones that are out there. It's just, it's out there. The GitHub is where everybody hangs out that does code, including our friends at DJI. That's where their little software developers kit lives. And, you know, you can get out there and find just about anything that you want on the dark web, obviously. And some of it's good code, some of it's not so good code. But you take that baseline and, man, you can start building on it from there and doing just about anything you want.
Yeah, my issue with that is, you know, that nobody's really vetting that. I don't know if people think, like, it's a magic box, you know. Okay, whatever. But it goes right back to what I'm saying, too, on the capabilities deficiencies that we have here in the United States. So, you know, you got the everybody wants DJI at the DJI price point, which is great, you know, if you can use it. Yeah. Or, you know, second best is they have got to go to, you know, the open source stuff. And there are, you know, there is some proprietary code, but even that proprietary code, I bet you's got, you know, some open source stuff in there. I know even DJI was using some open source stuff. They didn't disclose it, of course, whatever. Kevin Finisterre found that out. So, you know, that to me is not a solution, not a permanent solution, another Band-Aid on the, you know, got like a whole box of Band-Aids on that one cut. So not really working too good for me. And then you got, so on Twitter, there's a total dust up. You know, and you got Tevin's out there and other people are involved. And because he's, you know, he circled back to the DJI code and he's finding other stuff in there. And it's like, I can't even keep up with it all. It's just going, you know, there's like, you know, 20 or 30 tweets a day about it, what it is. And, you know, I'll be the first to admit that I don't understand, you know, code, what's in there and all the rest of that stuff. But, you know, he's posting it and talking about it. He's been reliable, knows what he's talking about, and there are more issues. And, you know, he's also talking about some of the stuff with the open source code and some of the issues and the hypocrisy and whatever else. So, going back to the original kernel. Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say I've spoken with Kevin at length. Yeah, he knows his stuff. Smart guy. I mean, he's a really smart guy. And for him to pull off what he did with DJI's code, I think is pretty significant. And, you know, when you know what you're looking for, you can get in there and find those back doors and find little trap doors that open up when, you know, and wherever they want them to. So it was pretty embarrassing for him, I'm pretty sure. But obviously it was enough for them to go after him. So, it's there. It's real. And those things that you're talking about with the code, I mean, there are so many people that use toolkits. And what it is blocks of codes that blocks of code that is already written to do certain functions. And they'll just take them out and plug them in, right?
Right.
So there's where you start introducing some of the holes and some of the things that could be easily exploited.
Right. And you know, so, and the other thing to think about, you know, I've talked to someone about the DJI code, you know, because we were talking about software certification years ago.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, some like 2 million lines of code or something. And it's crazy. You know, it's a crazy amount of code.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, you know, even that Boeing case, the last one with the hardware, and the pilot got off because the FARs don't say software is a part of hardware. And you know, it's such a big mess and a convoluted problem with the regulator and the FARs. And I'm sure you've got a FAR aim book. Anybody that's suffering from, you know, insomnia can use it as a cure. You know, convoluted mess, just a complete poop show. It's all safe and everything else. I think it needs some work, but whatever the case. Anyway, so that's one thing I think that going on over there, you know, the different things going on. We talked about some of the videos. I just, it's hard to believe, and maybe since because we're so close to it or whatever, I don't know, but it's really hard to believe that at this time, at this juncture, that people are in denial about the technology. And I know why they're in denial. You know, one of them is, and I posted a story about this a few years ago. It was basically how DHS, DOD, ICE, and Skydio stole my DJI narrative. And if you look back over the years, you know, just to 2, 3 years, whatever, 4 years, even if you want to go back to 2017, this information's been out there. You know, it's the same deal with the drone regulation where people are like, oh, there's regulations for drones. You know, man, come on. Nobody's buying that. You know there are. You're just in denial. And it's the same thing with the, you know, let's say the security issues with where we're at in drones. You're in denial. And the reason you're in denial is because 70% of the people doing drones as a servicio are using, or more, maybe even 95% are using DJI drones. But if you're not using DJI drones, you're out of business. And you actually have those people lobbying Congress to go light on DJI because we need them for our business, and everyone's in denial. And, oh, no, they're not spying, or they're not, you know, agents of the PRC. And you know, so the message there is, yeah, they're bad. Yeah, we need another solution. But no, we're not going to let anybody else come in and be a solution because we want these capabilities at this price point that's ultimately funded by the PRC. CCP.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's a pickle, you know? So, I you know.
Yeah,
I
don't, yeah,
know,
yeah.
I mean, if I, you know, I have a solution. I don't, you know, put a bow on that after we come around here, you know. So you got, you know, there's this is the springtime euphoria that we have a lot of the time in this industry where everybody's like, it's kicking off, we're going for it. The FAA UAS symposium is coming up, which I can't get I can't even get a call back on a press pass. It's really pathetic, you know. You know, AUVSI is the firewall, you know. I maybe they need that $350. I just don't even know. You know, maybe it's that close. Maybe that's the deal. You got to have paid access to federal officials, so the wheels of advocacy rolling, or whatever. I don't know. Whatever you think, you want to educate the masses or whatever. But anyway, you know, it's going to be in April 28th or whatever. Oh, we just had the Beyond Visual Line of Sight arc. This is what's going to happen. UTM's coming, even though, you know, we've been working, the government and like GE has been working on, you know, UTM since probably the late 60s, you know. So, yeah, any day now, it's happening.
Yep.
We're going to use standards. We're going to do all of that. Oh, God, it's going to be great. It's going to happen. And that's going to be the rah-rah thing. And you're going to have a bunch of idiots running out there. Oh, I gotta go down to Best Buy and buy some more DJI drones. I can go out here and do whatever I want to do. It's going to be great. And, you know, we've got 86 Beyond Visual Line of Sight waivers, which the majority are actually extended visual line of sight waivers. 86 of them in a country with 330 million people, which, you know, we both believe there's probably more than 330 million people here. You know, nothing's scaling with that kind of... you know, the FAA Part 107 favor waivers, you're not scaling anything up. It's ridiculous to even let that pass through your lips, in my estimation. What do you think, Gene?
Come on, man. I think we've got, in Texas, I think we added another 15 million people here in the last year, you know, with the way the border is. So at least.
I know, that's funny as people say that about, how do you know there's all these people in California? I mean, supposedly there's this, like, mass exodus out of California. You wouldn't know it. The traffic's nasty. There's people everywhere. The housing values just keep skyrocketing 20-something percent a year. You know, so, you know, it's obviously somebody's coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't have time to look into that. But whatever. Whatever the case, I look at these, you know, and I think that even the cheerleaders are starting to, with the AAM thing. I mean, you see these renderings of these vertiports that obviously cost, you know, millions to build, with one heliport thing on it, and I'm like, the renderings don't even make sense. It's obtuse. You know, oh, and, yeah, well, we're going to be, Joby's going to be flying next year. It's going to kick off. We're going to be everywhere doing it in Miami. You're going to, you know, go see Pitbull and ride the, it's like, you people are, I don't even know who's investing in this stuff. I'm wondering if there's like some kind of investor psychosis or, you know, I mean, it's even worse than Drone 2.0, but whatever, man. Hey, it's not my, well, maybe there is some of my retirement money in there. I don't know.
Yeah,
got to look around. I pretty much got out. You know, I was like, hey, man, this is, I don't know when the bottom's going to fall out of that deal. I'm still trying to recover from the .com. You know, I don't know if you have a retirement, but I lost a lot of money in 2020 or 2000. I lost.
I was going to say, wait a minute.
I don't think I've ever. I haven't recouped all the money I lost in all of those high-tech stocks that went south. All I got out of it was a web van, you know, container I still have in the garage or in the basement. I got that. That's what I got to show for it.
Yeah. I can go a little further back. I can go to the B2B. It was the whole B2B thing that killed me.
Yeah. It was like, look, it's going to be those milk bone dog biscuits. And some cat food. That's the retirement food plan. Got all the food groups right there. That's a tough one. So, you know, and then even funnier, so, you know, then the Europeans are like, oh, God, new space. And the lady that was over there at EASA, you know, she had a 4-year term. She's like, we're doing new space 2020. It's kicking off. And then everybody's like, you know, beating the drum and they got the pom-poms. It's got to be great. We're kicking it off. It's all going. We're going to have new space. We're going to have new TM. We'll have AAM. Oh, God, it's going to be wonderful. I mean, even my last guest we had on, he's doing drone delivery, and UTM's going to be here next year or this year. And it's all predicated on standards that haven't been vetted or don't exist. You know, it was just some edict, like, you're going to get it done. You're going to do it. And so nobody knows what the standards are. There's no clear, concise, you know, verbiage on how to get there. Just make it so. So I'm not holding out much hope. And I'd say even the cheerleaders are starting to say, hey, man, wait a minute. You know, there's no birthday party in here. So I just, it's like, okay. So, you know, it'll be great. You can go to these meetings and sit there and listen to people lie to your face again. About what the progress is and whatever, the regulator, I'm saying, and people there hustling to try and, you know, shake some money out of the trees. I guess it's good money if you get it. It's comical how many people have in this industry, the high flyers of big companies, decided to quit and move on to some obscure startup. And, you know, it's funny. I laugh about that with old timers. You know, how many people have we seen fall from like, oh, it's kicking off next year, and, you know, fired?
Oh, many. There's too many to name. That list is a very, very long list.
Oh, yeah. It's funny. You know, they're all that, that Egan guy, he's negative, he's a jerk. You know, it's like, all right, well, you know, let's see what you can get. Oh, fired? Oh, wait, no, you're leaving for some obscure startup. You're just tired of the private jets, the money, the prestige, the butt kissing. Can't take it anymore. I'm out of here. You know, I mean, that's happened to you probably in the last 50 times in the last 20 years. You just get tired of all that money.
So many times, you know, but I keep coming back and, you know, I've given up on my first million, working on my second kind of a deal. But, it's, you know, it never gets old.
Oh, I think we're going to see a whole other round of it. It goes hand in hand with the cycle, you know, the FAA. Oh, you know, there's another thing, you know, even with the Beyond Visual Line of Sight arc, right? So we had Doug Marshall on, and he reminded us that the small UAS arc, right, we get the recommendations, which is basically, you know, what we proposed to the RCAPA guidelines and before even the arc kicked off. You know, it took 7 years and 4 months for them to come up with what I'm going to say is was not a heavy lift. And people think this Beyond Visual Line of Sight and UTM and all the rest of that's going to kick off, man. And when? If something really simple took 7 years, how long do you think it's going to take before this UTM thing is rounded out? You want to give an estimate?
No, I'm not even going to go there on that one, because like you say, how many times were we told, hey guys, give it 8 months, 10 months max, you'll be flying, right? And we know how all that turned out. But and Patrick, what I try to tell people is it's not that we're pessimists. We are really, really optimists. We just have a track record.
Well, this just happens every couple of years. It's the same cycle. It's just the regulatory wheel of suffering. It's just, it is what it is. It's funny you said 8 to 10 months, whatever, a year. That's about what it takes to get a waiver. Maybe $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. It's ridiculous. But, I'm persona non gratis. I'm kind of like kryptonite here, because these guys don't want to hear anything. They don't want to hear, hey, look, you're making 200,000, whatever. God bless you. A year. Pushing the peanut around, kicking the can down the road. And meanwhile, United States is slipping into the backwater as far as aviation is concerned. And even, they talk about the inclusivity and, we got to have it for everyone and we got to have STEM. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's great. You got to have all that. But if you have the root problem, and the root problem is you don't have regulation that's going to allow this industry to flourish or scale in VC funding talk. The rest of that stuff is just busy work and move. And anybody with half a brain should be able to see that. It's like, if you don't, the government is supposed to, and again, this is for the old timers. The government is basically just supposed to be able to facilitate opportunity. And I think people have lost sight of that. It's like, that's all, you just facilitate up a little opportunity and we're supposed to do the old Yankee ingenuity and work hard and all the rest of that stuff. And then you can go out and, innovate and build things and build the railroad and stuff. Right. You remember that, Gene?
I do, and what really kind of struck me when you were making that little statement there. You remember there was an administration here just a couple back that very pointedly said to all entrepreneurs and business owners that you didn't do that. We did that. The government did that. Do you recall that statement when that was made?
I did. I think that kind of kick the legs out from under that notion that we're here to support opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. It did. All things come from, the centralized government that we currently enjoy.
Yeah, well, that's university talk. And university talk is what we've got now. We've got, I would say, university administration model trying to run the country, and it's just not working. You can be a wishful thinker or whatever. I'm a pretty practical guy. This dog ain't gonna hunt. That's all there is to it. But whatever, you do whatever you want. I got my three jobs keeping me busy just to stay afloat. But I agree. That's not there are things that, like the roads. People, you're socialist if you like roads. That is, we're paying taxes and what we're the return that we're getting from the highway system. And I think that they stole that from Germany, because basically Germany, when they opened up the Autobahn and the highways, there's a market for cars, there's a market for trucks, there's transportation and logistic hubs and all the rest of that stuff, which some of the UTM thing, if the government built some of that or facilitated some of that, would definitely help. It's like what they do with the airports, and then you've got air commerce and air money being made off of those different industries, which I think it's time to even revisit some of that. And maybe it's, socialist. I don't know, to say, people need education in aviation. Maybe that should be free. you know, you can go get your pilot's license, you know, or subsidized.
Wow, that would be
education.
A concept.
Well, you know, I've said this before, you know, that the Commerce Department and the CAA before the FAA, and, you know, I think we've talked about this, that the competition could swing a dead cat, man, or a live cat or whatever, and not hit, you know, some company involved in aerospace. We had all of those different companies, you know, North American, Douglas, you know, all of them. You can just go on until the cows come home. Hughes, you know, Hiller, I mean, it just goes on and on. There are all these companies. And there was lots of innovation because of it. And that's because these companies were run by different people who had different ideas on how to solve problems. And that's another thing you probably remember. I mean, you know, it used to be back in the day, you know, 70s, even probably in the 80s, you could get the guy running the company on the phone, you know, and talk to him.
That's
hey,
true.
I need
that's
this,
true.
This, this.
That's
yeah,
true.
And that, now it's you get some minimum wage person on the phone if you get past the, you know, the recording
automated
message.
System. Yeah, the automated.
Exactly.
System.
And I'm not deriding the minimum wage person, you know, I'm just saying that, they, you know, hey, we want you to be the firewall. Okay, well, you're going to train me? Nope, just sit there and answer the phone. So, you know, it's hard to get anything done, whatever the case. But anyway, you know, that just doesn't, that's, it's not a, you know, the STEM thing is great, but you got, you know, you're throwing away good money after bad because you don't have the opportunity. And it's the same thing with the inclusivity thing, man. You throw out, you know, you have the full mass integration like Congress told you to do, 2015. There's going to be tons of jobs. And in those jobs are going to be people from all walks of life. And that's just, this is not, it just, you know, everybody's acting like we're in, you know, Selma, Alabama, circa 1950 or something. You know, there's just no opportunity for anyone. It's just not true. There's no opportunity because there's no bandwidth or pipeline. You know, there are only a few companies doing this, and there's not really. I mean, you know, I was over at Jonathan Rubric's website, and if you look at the graph on, you know, companies selling drones. I mean, he's got a graph, you know, 3D Robotics is on it, GoPro's on it, a couple other companies that are out of business are on it. And besides that, all the other people, you stack them up, and they're not even, I don't know if you'd even have 10% of what DJI's selling, you know? And is that
that's,
because
yeah.
We don't have, yeah, we don't,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, we don't know what's going on, especially with the whole blue list drones that are going on. And that's kind of, I think that's kind of a way for the government to kind of not totally do a protectionist market right up front, but it does at least provide incentive for U.S. makers to go in there and try to build something comparable that will go out and compete with it. But yeah, you know, it's just unfortunately we haven't seen it yet, and the blue list has been out how long? 2 years now? One?
Well, even the blue list has got problems, you know, and the people that the companies that are on the blue. I mean, there's, like I said, I mean, I'm doing a lot of this, you know, DOD contracting thing in my other job, and you know, it's an issue. And, you know, people are looking for quick fixes. There are no quick fixes. And, you know, I've seen this too. You know, it's funny. People are like, you're anti-Chinese. No. I think you got to emulate the Chinese model. They have an ecosystem. They have a lot of money, $1.5 billion by some reports into the country. So, you know, that's what you're talking about. I will say that, you know, they are coming up to speed. There are new programs. They're putting more money into it. They're starting to decide. DIU has actually put out a that's the Defense Innovation Unit, finally put out a request for someone to help them, you know, discover and vet technologies and whatever else. This is something I pitched to the Navy Special Operations Command in 2010. And at that time, there were still people hanging on with me in the United States, as far as manufacturers were concerned, with different capabilities. You probably remember that because you were one of them.
Yeah.
And and I would say, even at the time, I'm like, hey, you need to tell, okay, this exists, you know. Oh, you know, you're full of crap, you know, whatever. Those people, a lot of them have either been bought out and shelved or went out of business or whatever else. So I'm glad to see that. I'm not applying for that because if you do, then you're kind of precluded from bringing any of your own technological solutions to the table, whatever. You know, again, I think there's good intentions, and I just don't know that they're well enough thought out. But it's good to see, you know, we're moving in the right direction. Navy's doing the same thing. People are starting to, hey, we need to get out there. And I think what it is, too, is, and you probably remember this, too, from the mid-2000s and all the rest of that, when the military started to get into the drone thing. And I think they were sold a false bill of goods by the vendors. And you know, I was even having a conversation with someone else yesterday about AeroVironment. And they're like, oh, you know, they had advocates and the military wanted this stuff. And, you know, they were able to do that. But they were also able to do that with Access 5. You know, NASA came in and gave several companies a bunch of money, including General Atomics and whatever else. And then what we're seeing in the Ukraine is you can buy Turkish drones for $1 million a copy that can kind of do the same thing as a Predator or Reaper or whatever. And it's, you know, 30-some-odd million dollars cheaper. And you start having, you know, 10, 20, 30 of those shot down, and the bill racks up pretty quick. So the other issue we still have even here, and this is, you know, there's like the sniff test. You know, in the Beyond Visual Line of Sight arc, you had AeroVironment and Boeing in situ, you know. And I'm not, you know, okay, yeah, you got some smart people there and whatever else, but that's, nobody wants that stuff, you know, sorry. So, and you can't buy it, you know, I've made jokes about that. I tried to buy a Puma, I think it was at Farnborough. And I went up to the booth and, you know, you got financing, is it bad checks, what is it? I'm ready to take one home today, which couldn't buy, you know, because it's such an advanced and sophisticated technology. You know, whatever.
Yeah, ITAR and the Commerce Control List is a funny thing, isn't it?
Well, that and, you know, the $250,000, you know, the check would have been bouncing all the way to the bank. Because I don't have that kind of money laying around to, you know, spend on
drugs. Oh, come on,
Patrick.
Oh, come on.
I'm going to have to get a night job. So, you know, so any thoughts in closing on the convention?
Well, I think a big problem that we've had is with that ITAR and Commerce Control List. If the folks who remember our CAPA will remember that we actually petitioned the ombudsman. Do you remember that?
Are you talking about the Commerce? Because I remember,
yeah.
I remember 2009, the last meeting of the ARC, I called that dude. What's up? Family show, because I can't exactly tell the dude what I said. I'm at the meeting, and we're getting poked right now. You know, the conversation did keep going. But, yes, I remember reaching out to the ombudsman at the Commerce Department. Yes. They called over to the FAA, and the FAA was like, oh, yeah, we're just having this ARC. We're on it. And it was going to be a few months, and everything is going to be kicked up. No problem. He's overreacting. So that's what went down with that. So, you know, and we were going to talk about the robotics summit. We kind of glossed over all that. But, you know, so at the Texas Robotics Summit, what was your favorite thing? Was there a certain scenario? Was it a session? Was it a training? Was it a technology? What was it? What made it all worth it for you besides the picture?
Well, I tell you, yeah. Besides the beer and the barbecue,
beer
it was
too.
It was a, that's right, the beer too. there was a really good spread of not only new tech and hardware and stuff like that. There was some good good software stuff out there. You know, they had a very modest, I would call it, vendor tent out there. But, you know, you had the big ones out there. You had BGI and your friends at AeroVironment and several others. And you got to look at all their stuff and, you know, put your grubbies on it and touch it and feel it. And that was always good. But I got to tell you, more than anything else, you get these people that come from all over the place and they're starting the program. They have tried to share as much information as they could. It was a fantastic information sharing sort of networking sort of deal and finding out people what people are doing, what agencies are doing with what drones and how they've done it. And, you know, granted, I think that DJI, with their 85% of the market share, if you will, there's a lot of agencies that have invested a lot of money in that, and I don't see how they are going to be able to make that transition. That was one of the big discussions. Obviously, Florida, you know, having, you know, outlawed Chinese drones for state use is kind of a first step. And there's a lot of other states out there that are looking at it as well. And everybody's thinking, okay, am I going to have to replace my, you know, Matrice 300 here next year because somebody's going to pass a law? And, you know, they're here with the new M30 that's got all the new buzzers and whistles on it that they're come up with, and it looks great. So what do we do? And then, you know, there were some folks there with blue drones as well, and some very large drones, which I really enjoyed, you know, watching the big, large drones fly. And you know, you kind of watch Rantizo's big birds, and, of course, that's a DJI as well. We only had one crash that I know of. And that was actually visual observer error, but we won't go into that. So, you know, it was not just one thing. I've spent a lot of time out on the speaking circuit, going to all the commercial shows, Interdrone, you know, all that for years before COVID. And, you know, typically I was a speaker, and I was kind of involved in that end of it. This time I got to go as a participant. And it was great, you know, not having the pressure of having to do, you know, some sort of presentation, that sort of thing. And then, you know, having to support it afterwards and, you know, defend your whatever your statements were. So it was really pleasant to go out there and meet with the people that I have discussed stuff with for the last, what, 17 years now? And get their opinions, and it was great. It was like a old folks reunion. I'm sorry. I guess somebody made the statement that, you know, I was one of those ones that was probably the most underrepresented generation just because of my age, and that I have been doing this stuff while most of these guys that are attending the show were still pooping yellow in their diapers. So that kind of gave me a little pause for – or calls for pause, but it was a good show. It was a really good show. Windy as all get out, didn't stop anybody from flying. They were still flying. Dusty, we had all that great Texas dust flying into our barbecue while we were eating, and it was just, man, it made everything just right.
Oh, yeah, I thought that was the dust was seasoning. It's they're coming to territory.
Yeah, the red dust is a little hotter than the black dust, but yeah, it's okay.
It's good stuff. It is interesting. I know what you're saying too. The pressure, you got to, you know, it does kind of detract from the enjoyment or being able to just be the wide-eyed participant and see what's going on. So, you know, it's interesting.
It really does.
You know, so we had this, and it's mainly like first responders, whatever else, and maybe you saw that news story too, where, you know, crime's up 300-something% in New York, you know, and they're like, oh, we're going to use drones to fight crime, which to me, I'm seeing, the clickbait drone story right here, because really, crime's up 300. I mean, and I'm not a law enforcement expert. You know, I've just been on the planet for 50 some odd go around the sun. And, you know, the problem there is enforcement. you know, and the courts. I don't think you need drones to, you know, battle crime. You know, you've proven that you can do it. I think that there's another issue. And it's funny, you know, so the clickbait, and then I think what's going to happen is they'll go out and buy all these Chinese drones, and then either some legislation is going to come in and say you can't use them, or they're going to figure out that the drones aren't Batman. What do you think?
I think everybody's got a pretty good idea of what the capabilities are and how they fit in. I don't think anybody has any unreasonable expectations, but they do live up to the reputation of being a force multiplier. You know, and whatever your perception of a force multiplier is and what it does for your agency or your public safety service, it's true. It is a force multiplier. So
what
I think it's pretty well grounded.
All right. Well, you know, we'll see. I mean, I'm not sure it could be a tool, but, you know, if your prosecutors aren't prosecuting.
Well,
I mean,
I'm not going to go there on that.
Well, we're seeing it here in California. They passed a law, and you know, if you steal something that's under $950, it's a ticket. It really can't even stop you, and it's just crime has just gone rampant. You know, but I think it's prosecutions, you know, dumping. Anyway, yeah, that's a whole different story. If anyone wants to figure out how not to run your state, come to California. Real quick, and we can help you out. So the other thing I wanted to ask, so, you know, the DJI, the new bird, you know, what's the IR look like? Is it pretty good? Is it clear quality?
Well, I mean, come on. Because of the said ITAR and Commerce Control List, we as mere mortals are never going to get anything past 640 by 512 resolution. That's it, you know? And for you computer people out there, that's not even VGA. That's not even close to, you know, 720 HD at all. So, I mean, it is what it is. It does okay. It's just like a FLIR, even though it's not true blue FLIR. You can still see, pick up thermal signatures. I haven't been able to dive into the accuracy and how, you know, what their resolution is temperature-wise. But, you know, for the public safety use, it's typically done with a FLIR. It's perfectly acceptable. Now, one of the things that I will say that kind of gets my goat a little bit is that 48 megapixel effective camera.
Right.
You know, that's just smoke and mirrors, folks. You know, if you're looking for a pretty picture with all sorts of file bloat, then that's the camera for you, because a single image in that, software enhanced resolution is 25 megabytes. Okay, so if you want to send that in an email, Google will tell you, you ain't doing it.
Is that how people are communicating these days? No, I'm kidding. I'm being facetious on that one.
Wanted to finish on that one. You got a 12 megapixel imager, and it's kind of the same way with the zoom. You know, the zoom camera, the Z30 that they had out there, the zoom that would go, you know, like 2.5 miles, you know, and you could read a license plate. It was a 3 megapixel imager, right? It's all glass. It's all optics. That's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. Same way with this new camera. It's really a 12 megapixel imager. So if you really want to get the resolution on the ground that you're used to seeing with your Phantom 4 Pro or your Mavic with a Hasselblad 1-inch sensor on there, it ain't going to be there. And I don't know that
that's
folks really recognize that yet. So it's smaller, it's lighter. You know, they've done all that, and we've predicted that for years, is that the payloads are going to get smaller and lighter, and, of course, that leads to longer flight times, and they say that it'll get 41 minutes. Now, I think that's optimistic, but,
especially,
you know, there you
wind.
Go. Yeah, especially in the wind.
Well, so the IR, I mean, you know, I had, let's say, concerns about the partnership with Flair. And, you know, it's like, yeah, I just don't understand how you're going to do business with this company. I mean, I understand the capabilities and you want to sell cameras and all the rest of that, but I mean, you're going to have to give them some of your secret sauce. And we know who likes to reverse engineer stuff. And now,
I think that's already
know,
done.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know, whatever, you know, whatever. I mean, I've noticed the new owner, the Teledyne folks, have really dropped the whole partnership thing like a hot rock.
Yeah.
So whatever, whatever. I know the IR thing and the nighttime capability thing. It's a game changer. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. So that's cool. You got to see some new stuff again. But I know they have different like vignettes and scenarios and areas, or whatever. Anything just like really stick out, or did you just where the whole thing was just awesome?
Oh no, they had like a Huey up on a platform, which you could go out and fly all around it and do a 3D model of the Huey that was sitting up on the platform. The old 212, you know, the old Vietnam era, you know, Ride of the Valkyries kind of 212 that was static display up there. And, you know, you could practice your stuff. They had obstacle courses out there. Of course, Mist was out there. They had all three of their courses set up and were running them. Everybody could fly those. The lake, of course, is always a big draw. We didn't have – I was surprised to see that we didn't have any maritime robots in there or any submersible robots in there like we did last year because, you know, I thought that was a pretty big hit. But, you know, you could fly way across the lake, and they had a tower, a rappelling tower up there, and it had targets in it you could use to check out your FLIR with. And so there was a lot of stuff to do and see there with the technology that was brought. Yeah, I mean, you actually got to see it in action and go do stuff, which was pretty good. And, you know, the whole demo conundrum that you have every time you start it up and you got a bunch of people looking at it, something falls off, right? So that was there, you know, and it was one of those things where people were scrambling and trying to fix stuff right at the last minute. Typical demo stuff, and it was kind of warmed the cockles of my heart to see everybody struggling with their hardware to try to make it go sometimes.
Right. Well, that's kind of the fun of the show, you know. Is to overcome, let's say, those technical issues. But it's hard when you're the guy. But, you know, those demos, that's kind of where the rubber meets the road, and you've been out in the field plenty of time and know yourself that, you know, it's kind of that Murphy's Law deal, that it can happen, it's going to happen, you know. If it can go wrong, it'll go wrong and all the rest of that. And it does happen, but that's being a professional and overcoming that, you know, your checklist or whatever else is part of the name of the game. So overall, you thought it was a good thing, worth going to. You're going back next year.
Yeah. No question. I'm going to make my reservation next year simply because I think it's probably one of the best, most focused shows that you'll go to. It's not real big, so you get to talk to a lot of people. You get to meet a lot of folks that are actually using the equipment, and you get to see equipment that is relevant to what we're doing out here. So, totally worth it. Totally worth it.
Excellent. All right. Well, you know, thank you for the report, sir. And it sounds like that was a worthwhile event to spend time on, which is great. And I hope people hung around to the end on that, but, the lowdown, because we did kind of the middle kind of got into some of the issues. But I think some good content there on some of the issues, and hopefully that'll be food for thought for people to go and ask questions to their civil aviation authority and say, hey, why is this taking 50 years? What's going on? Where's the opportunity? Where's the where are the rules? Where's, you know, we're ready to go. And I think, I mean, it's been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, even the show that you just went to. You know, we don't have to talk about use cases. Or, oh, is there a use case for, you know, there's, you know, lots of use cases. That answer or question's been answered. So now it's like, how do we get from point A to point B in a fashion?
Yeah, let's make it go.
Yeah, exactly. You know, while we still can hope to have a domestic, you know, hardware industry. But anyway, all right. Well, besides all that, I guess till next week, Gene. I don't know. The show might be dark next week. I got a whole bunch of stuff. Anyway, all right. Well, thanks for your thanks for the report, and we'll talk soon.
Hey, everyone, be safe.